This is a CBC podcast.
Well, speaking of President Trump and those tariffs, he hasn't imposed tariffs on Canadian goods just yet, but he's threatening to do so. The plan on how to respond is being debated and discussed publicly by the premiers of this country, including Saskatchewan's Scott Moe. Moe met with the media this week to give his pitch on how to handle those potential tariffs. This is happening also as two major Regina area projects were put on indefinite pause, projects Moe said would create jobs and bring in billions in economic benefits. To break it all down, we're joined by Murray Madrick. He writes a political column in the Regina Leader Post. Good morning, Murray.
Good morning.
So, Murray, the premiers and the prime minister met in person last week. This week, there was a virtual meeting. And again, the topic was how to respond to those Trump tariffs. We know how Alberta Premier Danielle Smith has responded, saying she doesn't want Canada to impose tariffs on Alberta energy exports. Premier Moe spoke to the media on Wednesday. What did you make of what he had to say?
Well, his key word was de-escalate, and I don't think that's a word you've heard from Danielle Smith. And I think that's the critical difference between what we're hearing from the Alberta Premier and Scott Moe yesterday. In fairness to Scott Moe, he said some of the things that I think were supportive of what Danielle Smith, I think, is trying to message. And let's be clear, this is the first time Premier Scott Moe spoke publicly, so there wasn't a notion that he was coming on board with Danielle Smith. He was just, in essence, outlining his position. That said, elements of his position are similar to that of Danielle Smith. He's saying that it's probably a bad idea to escalate the situation by having major trade wars, by cutting off oil, or by basically imposing export tariffs or doing other things. It hurts a specific region. It's unfair. This is a big, vast country. We have varying interests, which is good and fine. But generally speaking, the better approach is to find a way, a targeted approach. He's very supportive of that particular notion and was. In essence, I think it was a smart, subtle, and nuanced message to both audiences. He had conservatives really cheering for him for getting on board with Danielle Smith, but that's not really what he did. His overall tone, I think, was still somewhat along that Team Canada approach, and he did sign the agreement, unlike Ms. Smith. So I think he found a path that as best as possibly could under the situation, please both sides.
How unique of a problem is this in the country, where we have all these regional differences? And it seems like, you know, if Doug Ford has his own interest, he's going to call election we are expecting next week. Danielle Smith, as you mentioned, has her own interests. Scott, our economy isn't exactly like Alberta's. It's similar. How unique of a problem is it to have these different competing interests within Canada?
It's a nightmare. And it's a nightmare in this particular situation when you could have a U.S. president who can say something as broad as 25% across the board Canada, Mexico, which makes no sense. And people aren't breaking it down in the way they would in Canada as to how does this hurt, you know, the automaker in Detroit or the farmer in Iowa or other things. And it does. Like, they're not having a serious conversation. They grow soy and sunflowers down in Kansas and Iowa and Nebraska and every place else. You have a new health services secretary who basically is talking about getting rid of all oils because that's the new evil in terms of fast foods and everything. Ironic, Donald Trump would be concerned about this, but I won't go there. Particularly,
yeah, he loves fast food. Yeah.
Well, I'm on camera right now, so I have no room to talk. But all that said, right now, the U.S. isn't looking at it as deeply as Canada, and Canada always does look at these things more deeply because we are a nation of regions. What we don't want is to become the 51st state, and I think that Scott Moe and others have understood the power of that message, and it was very clear to him that they don't need to be on the side of Donald Trump. But all that said, there's certain things that they need to protect, and one of them is the regional oil interest now in Saskatchewan. We have canola and potash, and canola is a mess too for any number of reasons. So,
yeah, let's get into that. And as I mentioned in the introduction, we saw FCL shelve too much hype projects. They were expected to create jobs and boost the economy, as I mentioned. The company says, quote, regulatory and political uncertainty, potential shifts in low-carbon public policy and escalating costs as the reasons, what are the implications for the Regina area, for Saskatchewan as a whole, with these two mega projects now not going forward?
Well, it's not good. Premier Scott Moe addressed that, saying, well, we still have other projects going forward, and they're good, solid projects, some of them big. He was talking about this vast network of canola crushing, in which we're going to be importing canola from other places just to have it crushed here, because Saskatchewan doesn't grow enough canola, which might fool you if you drive through here in a July day and see all that yellow. But that was his grandiose plan. That grandiose plan has to be scaled back right now because of this announcement. Now, the stuff is still happening, but this is bad news for the Regina area, for Saskatchewan in general, because we're talking 2,500 jobs in construction, and overall we're talking big dollars. But the problem was these projects were – the timing was the first problem, because it came right post-COVID. And so that's when construction costs, because everyone was building schools, everyone was trying to bolster the economy. Governments were spending money on all kinds of these things. So construction cost of this FCL AGT project basically doubled from in the neighborhood of $2.5 to $2 billion to something – or closer to five. And that was hugely problematic. Hugely problematic was the federal government that didn't give them a clear indication as to what biodiesel clean air fuel regulations would look like, what the tax credit would look like. In the U.S., there was the U.S. Inflation Reduction Act, which was a big problem because it made this particular project less competitive and building similar projects in the United States more competitive. So a whole bunch of things got together at the same time, none of which really had to do much with what Scott Moe was doing and or promoting. But the lesson here for, I think, Scott Moe and his government should have been that you just cannot overhype these things, because they're not all going to come together and come to fruition. There were canola projects that were being abandoned even before this one. This is a big one to be abandoned. Now, there's still others, and there's still good news in this area, but it's not the great news it once was.
And speaking of promises, we heard, during the election campaign, and you and I have talked about this on the show, and you've written about this, the first order of business comment from Scott Moe that got a lot of attention over a change room policy in schools that was after the elections, pulled back on from the premier. Yesterday, we had a little bit of an update to that, as the Minister of Education put out a statement. Then he held a press conference saying that the school divisions, with working with parents and students, will have until June 30th of this year to have a policy on their website if they don't already have one. What was your reaction to this position from the government here on this topic?
Well, weirdly, it was sort of similar to the reaction I had to his tariff announcement, in the sense that I thought Scott Moe was speaking to a couple audiences in a nuanced and subtle way. When he made the announcement, it was a horrible announcement, by the way, and I still maintain that. He was speaking to a right-wing audience for reasons beyond anybody's understanding, but presumably to solidify rural vote. No one's really sort of explained as to why anybody really needed this policy on change rooms when it's so rarely used. Obviously did a mea culpa after the election, and when he saw the vote results and everything else, and that he wasn't taking anything vaguely resembling a moderate path, or more specifically, a conservative path that was politically productive for him. So he said he acted hasty and made a mistake, and that he'd leave it in the hands of the school divisions to develop their own policy. Well, he did that, but there's a little bit of nuance to that too. The school divisions have to put this forward in a public way. They have to consult with parents, guardians, and students. So those with strong conservative views will still have their say. So there's a bit of a speaking to, maybe even a little bit of a dog whistle to that particular group, saying, I still hear your concerns, etc. But it looks like the way he put it forward, he's handed the whole thing off now to the school boards to deal with it. And let's face it, the school boards in Regina and Saskatoon are going to be way different than the school boards in rural. The SSBA is a pretty vast group that represents a wide swath of politics. So in that particular sense, he's speaking to a very different audience. And I think did so relatively effectively. I think this issue goes away right now in a way, but I think a lot of people, like they did with the tariffs, will listen to what Scott Moe said and hear what they want to hear.
Murray, thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.